listening to Spitball with Adri Ballhawk Mellows and Marcus Innuendo Bingo Henson.
Hello, and welcome to the week 8 episode of Spitball. I'm your host, Adri Ballhawk Mellows, and back with me this week is Marcus
Innuendo Bingo Henson.
How are you, sir?
Good, mate. I'm good, thank you.
Good. And how have you been since our last show together?
Not bad. Went to the Wembley game. That was awesome. How about yourself?
Well, as I'm sure you're aware, I was in Chicago last week. I had quite the week since my last podcast. I've drunk a lot. Been to some very good bars, including Murphy's up in Wrigleyville. Great bar staff, great little Irish bar, fun to be in. And also had the pleasure of meeting the Legends Football League MVP for 2013, Miss Heather Rockstar Fur. And I have to say, I was a little bit intimidated to meet her, but when I did get to meet her, she is an absolute sweetheart. She knows her stuff when it comes to football. Made me feel really comfortable. She's just great to talk to, very good laugh, and I can't say enough kind words about her, to be honest with you. Just a great experience in general, and if all the rest of the LFL players are like Heather Fur, then I look forward to meeting some more of them. Myself and Marcus are also joined this week by another guest. Those who are familiar with our blog will recognise him as our Jacksonville Jaguars Fan Zone Hall of Famer. Welcome to the show, Richard Lloyd.
Good evening, gentlemen.
How are you, sir?
I'm good, thank you very much. Better now than I was maybe towards the end of Sunday evening.
I can imagine. We'll come on to that shortly. Now, I'm sure a lot of you know this week was the second International Series match at Wembley between the San Francisco 49ers and Richard's Jacksonville Jaguars, as we were just mentioning. How did you enjoy the game, or not so much enjoy the game, Rich?
Do you know what? The whole Wembley experience was excellent. You know, they got the crowd in well. The atmosphere was fantastic again. You know, this is the third or fourth one of these games I've been to. And the place was full of 49ers fans, which began to get a bit wearing towards the end. But I thought the Jacksonville Jaguars team as such and the whole franchise put on a good show, especially Jackson DeVille, who was perhaps stole the show slightly with first his entrance. Second, his streak across the pitch deep into the third quarter. And I'm thinking it was probably quite carefully planned, as most of these things are. People will now go away not thinking about Chad Henne, but will be saying, hey, do you remember when the mascot came flying in off the zip wire? Very clever.
Yeah, pretty special. He seems an absolute character. And did he seriously, he was the stripper? Well, not the stripper, but the streaker. No one was throwing dollars at him. We didn't see all the players lining up, just like throwing their 50s at him.
Most of you probably won't be aware. He's a bit of a character, actually. He tends to have a bet with the opposing mascot every game for a forfeit. So, for example, the Denver Broncos, he agreed that the number of points that the Broncos got, he would be shot that many times by a paintball gun from close range. So have a look on YouTube for that one. It's makes you wince.
I heard something about that actually on the commentary. They were mentioning that last week he got absolutely obliterated with paintballs, and I couldn't work out why he would have had that done to him. But
yeah, it's a bit of a sucker for punishment, but he's certainly consistent.
Well, he is. Of course, he's a sucker for punishment. He's a Jacksonville fan.
Indeed, as we all are.
How about yourself there, Marcus? What did you make of the game itself?
Yeah, I must admit, I was kind of dubious coming into it because having gone to the first international game, the Steelers-Vikings game, the atmosphere has to be one of the best games I've ever been at. I've been at pretty much all bar one of the Wembley games, and that was pretty much the best atmosphere. So I figured I didn't know whether or not this would be able to top it. And I must admit, when you first got in the stadium, there was a real buzz. And like I said, once the sort of dramatic sort of with him zip wiring in and stuff like that, it really actually gave the first start of the game. I mean, the first quarter had a real, really great electricity to it. And just it seemed not just from like the crowd around, but once the points differential, I mean, it was like 28-0 going into half or something like that. What did they get a score? Was it 28-7?
We got 3.
It was something like that. Three just before, that was it. Yeah. It was 28-3, and people, you could already sense people sort of just like not taking it as seriously, especially some of the sort of like the fair weather fans who sort of just because it's in London, I'll kind of turn up. I mean, I had a group of Americans in front of us and to our left. Now, the group in front of us, they were Minnesota fans. They come here for the first game, but they bought the special package, which means you got both at a reduced price. I mean, they were kind of in on it, but they were sort of more joking around, sort of chatting to us this game, you know, not paying as much attention. And the guys to our left, to be fair, I mean, they sort of decided to check out about halfway through the fourth quarter to try and beat the traffic home, because, you know, whereas the Vikings game, they stayed to the bitter end. I mean, it was just, it got wearing towards the end, which was unfortunate, because it was still, the Jaguars really picked up in the second half and they really gave it a really good going for.
Yeah, I actually feel a bit sorry for the Jaguars fans, not obviously just because of the result, but because of all the teams to play over here. There's kind of teams you'd want to avoid for it to seem more like a home match for the Jaguars. So you'd want to avoid the Bears, you'd want to avoid the Raiders, you'd want to avoid the 49ers and the Pats. It's kind of all the teams, you get the 49ers, so you know almost before the tickets go on sale that there's going to be predominantly 49ers fans there. What do you think, Rich?
Well, the trouble is that they're stuck between the proverbial rock and a hard place. If they bring over somebody, say the Titans, not to be dismissive of them, then it's not Jacksonville Titans. Yeah, you know, you're not going to sell as many tickets. They needed to bring somebody to play Jacksonville who would make the crowd turn out. And unfortunately, that generally means that it's going to be somebody we're going to struggle against. So it was really difficult. And, you know, you've got to say there were a lot of Niners fans there, you know, lots sporting older jerseys as well. So it's one of those teams that are going to bring the crowd out. And I think Wembley probably and the NFL had to do that, really.
No, right. Well, the game aside, Rich, what I wanted to ask you is, how do you feel the Jaguars are encouraging both existing fans like yourself and new fans in the UK to get involved with the team?
Well, they've started the Union Jacks fan club, and they've got quite well involved with the NFL UK website. So anybody on there will see there's been a bit of an upsurge on posts on the Jacksonville page, which was always fairly quiet. Obviously, as I mentioned before, they're sort of involving Jackson DeVille. Hopefully, you know, gets people to remember the name, if not some of the players. I did see, it's interesting to have a look around at, you know, what shirts people were sporting from the Jags, and I did see quite a few of the new Justin Blackmon ones, which I think, certainly when they first launched them, was the only ones they were selling in the UK. So you can see that they are beginning to get into the consciousness of the, you know, the UK fans, and I think a lot of people will go, you know they can go to a regular team, and they can, you know, even if it's maybe their second team or one of the teams that is unlikely to come over, I think they're managing to get a little bit of traction there. And it certainly seems, you know, there are a lot of people, you know, cheering in the right places for Jacksonville. It's always a bit of a strange atmosphere. I read some of what people are commenting on in the States about, you know, don't quite get third downs and, you know, who's meant to be making the noise. And because there's such a mix of teams, you don't quite get the same atmosphere as you would do sort of back home, as it were. Yeah. But I think they're doing the right things, and I think it's definitely going to help Shad Khan taking over Fulham. As a QPR fan, much as it pains me not to dislike Fulham quite as much as I did before, I think that would probably help, because it will be, you know, you'll see him in the press, certainly around London. He'll get on, you know, Talk Sport probably. He'll get in the Evening Standard. And every time Fulham will get mentioned, Jacksonville will get mentioned, and there will be a bit of cross-pollination as far as the two teams are concerned. So that was a very good move of his as well. They will be, you know, their name will be in the press away from the game, which I think is the important thing.
Yeah, because it would be a bit harsh if they just got remembered for the performance against the 49ers. And to be fair, it was just almost the wrong time and wrong place to be meeting the 49ers with them on the up, with the way their offense is starting to play as well.
But, I mean, hopefully people that did go will see, you know, we've got very few, but there are a few seeds of progress there that we can look to and say, you know, if we can join some of the dots, perhaps, you know, I think we've got one of the better wide receiver corps.
Absolutely.
Easy to say, but now we just need someone maybe to be able to hit them a bit more regularly, certainly in the red zone.
Yeah, to put you on the spot on that front, I'm not sure how hot you are on college football, but is there anyone coming out of college this year that you'd have your eye on to be drafted by the Jaguars in the first round to maybe fill that spot that they need at quarterback?
Well, everyone's saying Teddy Bridgewater, and at the moment he does seem to be the standout person. These things do have a habit of changing as the season goes through, but certainly that seems to be where most people are looking. Obviously, it does depend slightly on who declares, their availability. Johnny Manziel gets quite a few mentions, but he's maybe slightly further down people's boards at the moment. So yeah, there's an interesting class coming out. It's meant to be quite strong, and Jacksonville certainly seem to be looking to stockpile a few picks. So it'll certainly be quite interesting.
Yeah, fantastic.
And obviously, we're almost certain to pick first. And there'll be a lot of people out there wanting Clowney. So you never know what might happen in terms of a deal as well.
Oh, that's it. So potentially kind of getting maybe two later first-round picks for someone to draft up to 1-2.
Very possible. I mean, I think we probably will stick with number one and take a quarterback. But you never quite know what will happen on the day. Somebody may only want to go up two spots, and you might be looking at picking fourth and still getting a good deal.
Yeah, that's very true. So, well, that wraps it up for our game talk for the International Series match. But check out our audio highlights from the fan rally at Trafalgar Square.
So this is Adri Ballhawk-Mallows coming to you live from the NFL fan event here at Trafalgar Square, the fan rally. We got here a little bit early, so it's just starting to fill up now. We're right by the main stage. I'm here with my producer, Mark Taylor.
How you doing?
And also the young Carl Godfrey of Owls with Owl Spartans. How are you, sir?
I'm good, thanks.
Good, good. So, as I say, just starting to fill up our usual array of shirts. Obviously surrounded by a lot of 49ers and Jags, as that's the big game tomorrow. So, let's see what happens.
Welcome to the 2013 NFL Fan Rally. Jags fans in Trafalgar Square, let's hear you, Jags fans. Do we have any Niners fans here? We might have to try that again. So, Niners fans. Jags fans and people who are going to cheer for the Jags tomorrow. Jags fans. That's a little bit better. We've got a great show for you today. We've got the players and coaches of both teams going to be here. Colin Kaepernick will be up on stage. We will have alumni from both teams as well. Tony Baselli, the great offensive tackle of the Jags. Guy McIntyre, a three-time Super Bowl winner with the 49ers. And has anyone heard of a guy called Joe Montana? So a little bit of a lay of the land here in Trafalgar Square. You can buy your NFL merchandise at the back. I have to tell you that. You can buy your New Era hats. You can try out the NFL touchdown rig is up in that far corner there. And then we've got the Madden Challenge through EA Sports. You can have your picture taken with the Vince Lombardi Trophy as well. We've got music acts, cheerleader performances, just about everything we can think of to throw your way today. It's going to be split into two parts. Much of the first part will be about the Jags. And the second half of our show will be about the 49ers. Another couple of points. We will be collecting for the Poppy Appeal as well. The Jags have teamed up to collect on behalf of British Legion for the Poppy Appeal. So hopefully you give generously to a very good cause. And finally, an apology to the man in the front, all decked out in Minnesota Vikings. That was the end of September. Those diaries are a nightmare, aren't they? So we want you to enjoy the show. He was the first ever draft pick for the team back in 1995. He was one of the best offensive tackles of his generation, probably the best. A member of the 1990s All-Decade team. He's a Pro Bowler, a member of the All-Pro team, member of the Pride of the Jaguars. Okay, he's a very nice guy, but he was a bad man on Sundays. Please welcome Tony Baselli. Welcome back to London.
Good to be here.
We did a little fan night for the Union Jacks
club.
Just before the draft.
Are there any Union Jacks fan clubs out here right now?
Union Jacks fan club members?
There we go.
There's a few. Few more people here today though. What do you make of this?
It's a pretty good crowd here. I think London loves its NFL football. I think that's quite obvious by all the NFL fans out here.
There's a lot of 49ers jerseys, quite a few Jags jerseys, but we're seeing jerseys from all the teams. That's great to see.
Yeah, I don't really care for the 49er jerseys. That's all right. I do like seeing all those Jaguar jerseys, and I expect...
There you go.
You know, Neil will be here the next 4 years, so I expect those Jaguar jerseys to grow over the next 4 years.
So we could run a little competition, actually, that all those 49ers fans who just booed, we could pick one of you out. You can come up here and boo to Tony's face.
From the look of the crowd, I think I can handle myself, even though that I'm old and beat up. I think I can handle most of the as long as Justin Smith's not out there, I'm okay.
Justin Smith in disguise. Yeah, exactly.
All right, guys.
Take care. So that was perfect timing, as we've just come out of the autograph tent, and the voice you heard there was none other than Mr. Fred Taylor, Jacksonville Jaguars ex-running back, and also had a season or two with the Patriots now. Mark, that was a special moment in the tent for you, wasn't it?
Certainly was. It was quite a surreal moment.
How are you feeling?
Shaky. it's a special time for me. Been following Fred's career for a long, long time, and in 2001 when I was actually in Jacksonville, I actually bought one of these hats, one of these baseball caps, and I brought it along today, and I am so happy of what's just happened. Fred Taylor, I actually met Fred Taylor, I shook his hand, and he's actually signed my cap, so...
Yeah, it's quite an old school cap you got there as well. Did he have something to say about that?
Yeah, he was quite taken aback that it was a 2001 series. He said, you know, I haven't seen one of those boys in a long time. And he said that, you know, it looks like it's seen some action, so which it has. It's been everywhere with me, so...
Oh, brilliant. Well, I have to say, it was great to be able to share that moment with you, and great to follow up seeing Mr. Taylor afterwards and getting his autograph as well. And you can see it kind of meant a little bit to both of you. He was happy to see someone who'd been following his career for such a long time.
Yeah, definitely. And also to finish it off, well, the Jaguar cheerleaders turned up just afterwards, so that was a double whammy for me.
Yeah, and I know someone else, Carl, was quite happy with them as well, wasn't he?
Just a tad, yeah.
It wasn't just the peak on his cap that was standing up, but let's move swiftly on. Right, so let's just take a stroll around now so you can get a feel for the rest of the atmosphere around Trafalgar Square. He's going to give you guys some hassle.
He's got two, so he's giving one back.
You are joking me.
I couldn't be bothered, man.
That's brilliant. You just gave him.
One back now. I got
I don't want this one.
I kept this one, but he gave me two. I'm going to be in there.
What's that? Oh, Steelers Baltimore. That's one of the Thanksgiving games.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Look at what time in the morning it kicks off as well. Make sure you're not working on the Friday, buddy.
I don't work Fridays.
Oh, do you not?
No, I don't work Fridays, Saturday or Sundays.
Oh, fantastic. That should be good work then. Right, let's
go down. Is that Sunday or what? Is it?
No, it's Thanksgiving Thursday.
Oh, Thursday, yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't work Fridays. I can be up all night for that.
Oh, brilliant. Right, let's take a stroll down to where all the monster crowd is showing when you're...
I thought the autograph tent would be in there. I mean, look, it's got a red...
Yeah, it's more like a VIP tent, I think, isn't it?
They're just like...
Yeah, what do you call it? Hospitality.
Like corporate hospitality, yeah. Let's take a stroll down.
Hey, stop from the guys on the steps. Mr. Carl, I think it's fitting that you have the final word to the British fans here tonight.
Thank you for coming. Go Jags!
That's his final words, yeah.
Have you been catching passes from me all day? How about from these guys right
now?
Okay, that's it. Please go up for the Jacksonville Jaguars. Thanks, guys. Thanks, coach. Thank you. Fantastic, a first at the NFL Fan Rally, the entire team here, and we laid on the London weather for them, but they still came. Fantastic effort from the Jacksonville Jaguars, and we are going to play them out. It started in just a few minutes. We've got lots more coming up for you today. We've got lots of treats for you 49ers fans. Joe Montana will be on the stage.
We've actually got a couple of Hall of Famers here as well. Rob Woodson will be up. Pass your mind back. Anyone remember a great time?
Definitely time we found out.
Some great stories for those
famous
teams of the 70s.
Nice idea.
This is duck weather.
Yeah, you
ducks
know.
Like, ducks like this. I'm not a duck.
Tell us what you're going to do tonight. You can try it. But to play, the Jaguars play is out. Please welcome back the Jaguars drumline. Come on.
Now the crowd's going to split.
So much anticipation with Peyton Manning now quarterback for the Broncos.
Perfectly thrown pass. Demaryius Thomas has a different touchdown.
Great job.
Not only did they take the training wheels off Kaepernick, but they put him on a racing line.
You don't realize how fast he is until you chase him.
Touchdown to the pylon. Touchdown, 49ers.
This is Russell Wilson at his finest.
I'm going to be big now. I need you. Let's go get it.
Great vision by the rookie Russell Wilson.
Now we move on to the Monday night game between the Seattle Seahawks and Marcus's St. Louis Rams. Marcus, what are your thoughts?
I feel that we also desperately need a quarterback.
Really? You don't think Bradford's the man for you?
There is a big possibility that we need to draft someone for this sort of type. I'm not saying we need a like first rounder, but we need at least a second round sort of back, because it's going to be such a good quarterback draft. I think even in the second round we could pick up someone from the sort of the top 10 group and, you know, have a decent backup, because the problem is once your knee goes, your knee is susceptible, plus the offensive line isn't always, you know, we've had a problem for the last 4 years of keeping Bradford off his rump because he's constantly being sacked and stuff like this. I'm surprised this hasn't happened sooner, really.
But that's why you brought over Jake Long from Miami, wasn't it?
Yeah, I mean, that was the idea. But unfortunately, it's one of those things. I mean, defense was absolutely outstanding. Jeff Fisher has literally come in. This is what he wanted to do. He's a defensive-minded coach. He came in, he instilled his philosophy, and he got that out of the guys last night where they've been sort of waning and sort of failing to deliver. And he's told everyone. There was a players sort of meeting, and he said that he wanted every single man to step up his game for this one against Seattle. You know, Seattle, we hate Seattle. It's the bitter rivals. You know, in the entire division, I don't know if there's anyone that Seattle. I mean, St. Louis. I mean, we've always had rivalries with, say, the Friscos of the world and such, and, you know, Arizona's. But I think there's nothing so much as a Seattle game that, you know, really boils the blood. And we had them on the ropes, and really, from the most of it, we should, I say should, being the operative word here, because that Mr. Hindsight there, rearing his head, you know, what we could have done, but I think we should have won that game.
Well, yeah, you kept Russell Wilson to under 160 yards passing, didn't you?
Yeah, and we kept Marshawn Lynch to something silly like 30 or 40 yards as well.
Yeah, that's crazy good defense, and the last three games you've played against Seattle have actually been quite low-scoring games.
Yeah, I mean, we had everything there. It was unfortunate that our cornerback fell down on that deep play pass to Golden Tate. Really didn't like his attitude to that.
Yeah, I thought you might mention that.
But, you know, he did apologise, and I do believe that sometimes, you know, the guy's still young. He's still probably only about 23. It's only his, what is it, second year out of the college, so he's probably about 22, 23 years old, and he's still young and a bit of an idiot.
I want to play devil's advocate here, because I almost want to see more, not necessarily taunting, even though in certain... Well, maybe I do, actually, because anything that encourages, like, celebrations, taunting, you work up your opponents and you see how they react, see how strong they are mentally. It's like boxers before a big fight. They're always trying to psych out their opponents to see if they can get the mental advantage. Why can't we bring that into a team sport? Why not have a little bit of taunting in there and see how the players react? Because ultimately the true professionals and the true greats aren't going to rise to the taunting. And it's going to make a more bigger spectacle of the game. What do you reckon about that, Rich?
I don't know. It's a difficult one, isn't it? They do seem to be trying to cleanse it a lot in a lot of ways. If I could have a quick word about Seattle as well, that would be good.
Yeah, go for it.
It's you know, obviously they're going to be people's pick for the Super Bowl, and I guess there's kind of two sides to this. People will say, well, you know, if you're playing badly and you still win, yeah, that's definitely a good sign, but I'm not sure. They think, you know, a team playing their backup, they really ought to have put them away a bit sooner, shouldn't they?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And do you know what? That brings me on to a nice little point that I wanted to speak to you both about. Everyone's talking about Seahawks. Everyone's talking about Broncos. Do you know which team has beaten the 49ers, the Seattle Seahawks, and the Denver Broncos this year? The Indianapolis Colts. Why aren't we talking about them in the Super Bowl?
Well, I mean, they should win the division. The Texans have gone from heroes to zeros. In the hopefully in the reverse way that the Jacksonville might go the other way in the AFC South next season.
Absolutely. Although I
wouldn't bet on it completely.
Look at Kansas City. Got to have faith in the Jags. Yeah. Look at Kansas City.
But maybe don't discount them either. They've got a very tight unit there and they do just about enough every week.
Yeah, absolutely.
You wouldn't want to go there in the playoffs.
No, that's very true. And to be fair, with what Andrew Luck's doing with the Colts, you don't really want to go to the Lucas Oil in the playoffs either, I don't think.
No, absolutely not.
Okay, so just one final point on the Seattle-St. Louis game. I wanted to get your thoughts on this, Marcus. It almost seems to me that all you need for an ingredient to have a really good close game is you can put any two teams in the league, no matter how well they're playing, no matter how bad they're playing, but you put them on the main stage, the only game, the bright lights, we're talking Thursday night football, Monday night football, you put those teams in that situation and suddenly the game is amazing regardless of the form of the two teams.
Yeah, I'm not sure about that. There seems to be that little sort of myth that you're playing under the bright lights and suddenly everything will sparkle. I mean, one thing we can actually use that, I mean, just look at what happened Thursday night. I mean, the Panthers decimating the Buccaneers. I mean, I don't know if it's that sort of Monday night magic, really, because, I mean, I'm pretty sure there's something goes into the scheduling that they do try and pick decent sort of matchups. Like they pick stuff like Seattle and St. Louis, who absolutely hate each other, to play on Monday night. Or they'd pick someone like Skins Cowboys to play on the Monday night because, you know, it's good for watching as well. You know, it's people want to see the bitter rivals come in and try and, you know, take each other down.
So you don't think that the Thursday night game has the same sort of effect?
I think the Thursday night game's got a real problem, actually, in that it's just not long enough after the Sunday to get prepared for it.
Oh, so just not long enough for strategically, physically?
Physically, mostly. These days, these guys are, you know, banged up most of the time, aren't they?
Yeah, that's true. They're hardly ever 100%. They probably turn up to pre-season 100% and then it just goes downhill and depends on how badly downhill it goes. Next team I wanted to talk about, and one individual in particular, I want to talk about the Oakland Raiders and the young quarterback there, Terrell Pryor. Now, this week he had the longest ever run by a quarterback in NFL history for 93 yards for a touchdown. But it's not just that. We've talked about him a few times on the podcast purely because he is making a big difference to that Raiders offense. What do you think, Rich?
Well, I happened to see the Raiders last season with Carson Palmer. Now, he's actually, you know, he's probably better than he's generally given credit for, but they were pretty awful last season. I know people tend to say nowadays it's a passing league, but if you've got a guy that can run and they've got Terrell Pryor and, you know, dare I say it, Darren McFadden when he's fit.
Yeah.
They, you know, they're gonna put up a lot of yards, and you know, there was a big gap and he went through, and you know, he's not gonna get that every week. Yeah, if you've got somebody who can run from quarterback, you know, we saw Kaepernick do it against the Jags on Sunday as well. Is, you know, it's going to improve the team, and they're going to win a few tight games that they might have lost last season because Palmer wouldn't have been able to go through the gaps.
Yeah, so Marcus, from a defensive point of view, where would you like to start on where Pittsburgh went wrong on that, biting on that play action?
I don't know. I mean, to be fair, the soft zone cover two, which they were playing, was very sort of run dominant, but you would have thought that there would have been enough guys in the box and there should have been some kind of outside container. You saw Troy Polamalu was definitely a sort of like the nearest guy to actually making a tackle towards him, and even then he was very widely placed. Like, it was almost like they were playing for, it's like a play action pass, or it's going to be a run to McFadden, and completely forgetting that Pryor has legs himself and he can run. That's how it looked, really. I mean, they put Polamalu slightly further out as pass coverage protection over to stop any sort of play action short under plays.
Yeah,
and that just left the middle of the field wide open, because then you've got basically a better part of nine guys in the box to stop that run, and then they had two guys out on the one guy on the right to stop the throw, and they thought they'd cover it all, but that's where they went wrong.
Fair play, great play call all round. And thinking of great plays, before we move on to some other games, I wanted to take a minute to talk about Matthew Stafford. Now, it was a great play at the end of that Detroit-Dallas game. Or was it? Marcus, can you let me know? Are we saying genius or cheat? Now, the reason I bring up this question is because it's almost like an unwritten rule in the NFL for defenses to stand off on any spike or kneel down, because the amount of aggro that happens should they try and charge the quarterback, and the penalty flags that fly if they do. Do we think Stafford's a bit of a cheat for taking advantage of that?
I don't, personally, because I've watched it a lot of times and I wouldn't mind seeing it slower and slower, but they may have assumed he was going to spike the ball, but I don't think he went to spike the ball and then did it. I think he just went up to the line of scrimmage and then went over. If he'd have gone to spike the ball and then faked it, as it were, not touched it down and went, yeah, fair enough, lay into him, but I think they just assumed, you know, that if you've got to play to the whistle. If the guy makes the play and goes, then that, I think, is fair enough.
So you don't think there was a little bit of almost like unsportsmanlike conduct when the fact that he was signalling to get everyone in the line and mimicking the spike?
I don't know.
I think, to be fair, I think if the defence is going to be watching him, what he does, and assuming that just because he says blue is blue, doesn't mean that the fact is that it can't also be red and he's going to go for that touchdown. I think the problem was there. They became too lax, assuming he was going to go for the spike. And you've got the guy down at the 1 yard line, and you're sitting there going, you've got to literally play. It's the same way as, no offense, I know it's an unwritten rule, but when Coach Shiano was making his guys earlier in the year, sort of they're making big waves because they were going for it on the kneels, and they were pulling through, and they were busting chops about it. And everyone, no one liked that. But I agree that you play to the whistle in every format of the game. You play not only to the end of the whistle, but you play the hardest that whistle.
Okay, well let's flip it another way. Say he does spike it, but during the play the defense charge in and an offensive lineman gets a leg broken in basically defensive line charging. Do we then have a go at the defense because they shouldn't have charged on a spike?
No. I'm afraid the guys are, like they said, they say they are gladiators on that field, and I think all those guys go in them with the mentality, especially you've got to remember where they were. This was a game winning drive.
The time on the clock as well, I think, is important here. There wasn't any, really. Yeah.
True, 12 yeah. seconds.
So I honestly think if something happened there, God forbid someone had broken their leg, they understand where they put themselves in those trenches week in, week out, and that they are the shield for that quarterback. And unfortunately, sometimes a shield is going to take a dent and, you know, might even break.
I think the only time you don't charge the spike is in the end of the game situation and the game's finished. But where you're on the, you know, 1 yard line and there's seconds on the clock, you've got to expect anything can happen.
Excellent. Well, great points there, gentlemen. Thank you very much. So what about other games this week, gents, that maybe tickled your fancy? Let's start with you, Rich.
Arizona Cardinals doing the Falcons, I thought was quite a big one. Now, obviously, a bit odd this week. I usually manage to catch quite a lot of different games, but having been to one, you tend to get slightly shut out. So it's mostly from from reading up afterwards. But yeah, the Arizona Cardinals beating the Falcons quite easily was something that certainly caught my eye.
Yeah, that brings up a point I raised on the blog this week, actually, that I'll throw at you, Rich. The Arizona defense doesn't get as much credit, I don't think, as it deserves. And I even went as far as to say that I think, barring probably Seattle, that Arizona has the best pairing at cornerback in Tyrann Mathieu and Patrick Peterson.
Yeah, I don't think you're too far off on that one. And, you know, it kind of goes back to what I mentioned before about Carson Palmer. You know, I think he can manage to... he's got a bit of space behind the offensive line there too. So they're not a bad little outfit there, all in all. They just need maybe a few more to take them up a level.
Brilliant. How about yourself, Marcus?
I love their defense. 38 points in fantasy this week. I really appreciate what they do week in, week out.
It always comes down to fantasy football with us, doesn't it?
No, I honestly think that they've got... I mean, the construct of the Cardinals at the moment is very heavily sort of set in the defence. I mean, we realise there are troubles. Palmer isn't happy there. I must admit, kudos on the offence that youngster Ellington, not many people put stock in him at the beginning of the season in the draft, and then you have to look, he had about 150 yards and a touchdown. So I think they've got some pieces now on the offence, but there's still a few gaps that need working. That offensive line needs a lot of work, reworking. But I think the defence is the one solid core to that team. They can hold that defence as close as they can together over the next couple of years and develop an offence. We could see them back into the playoffs and maybe in the Super Bowl, like was it 08 against the Steelers or 09?
I think it was the 08 against the Steelers, because I just remember the cover of Madden 08 being Fitzgerald and Polamalu.
Ah, well, there you go. So I can definitely see him going back to Super Bowl if they can hold on to this defense and develop some kind of offense. Maybe Ellington is the running back they need. You know, is Palmer the quarterback? I don't think he is. But again, that goes back to we've got a great QB draft coming up. So
yeah, just finally on that point about Ellington, actually, you've just reminded me that watching the college football last year, it was like him and Watkins and D'Anthony Thomas. You couldn't go anywhere, and obviously Manziel. You couldn't really go anywhere without talking about those, could you?
No, it was just what you call it. A lot of people didn't think he was big enough, the size enough. I think there was a knock just before sort of in the last year before draft. So I think there was a few people sort of like sold off his stock. But, you know, I'm guessing they're going to be wishing that they held him by, really. But it's one of those things. It's, you know, when you are giving your time to shine, do you take it or do you let it pass you by?
Yeah, well, there's a few different songs you could quote there. One being JLS, You Only Get One Shot. Thought I'd throw that out there. Or you've got the Eminem, obviously, as well, which would probably be a more suitable reference. So let's move on. It's a touchdown run for Andy Dalton. Doug Rowling being
chased. Throws before he's hit toward the end zone. Look on, Brazil! Caught! Touchdown, Colts! You know, as good as Rodgers was last week, Larry, he might be even better this week.
Oh, and he's done it!
And here is Matty Ice. And Bryant lines up to throw.
This should be a touchdown.
White's here with Packer. Oh, it's caught! Touchdown, Atlanta! Griffin, quarterback throw to the five. Knives in.
Oh, he looked like Sonny Jurgensen when he turned it up the field.
We've been doing this terminology section for a while now, so I thought it was only fair to give it a name. So, welcome to Football 101 with Professor Ballball. And of course, my teacher's assistant, Marcus Henson. This week, you like that, teacher's assistant, even though I always get you to do the explanations? Did you like that?
I like it.
Because like a true professor, I'm getting my teaching assistant to do all the work and I take the credit. It's kind of how it works, right?
Clearly.
Brilliant. So, this week, I thought it best to bring up some running back terms. So I know myself and Marcus quite often talk about different types of running back and whether they're a flashback or a thunderback. So I thought only fair to let Marcus himself explain to you what he means when he calls someone a flashback or a thunderback.
Right, so flash and thunderbacks. I must admit, I do tend to use this quite a lot when I'm describing a guy. It's a nice, easy terminology that makes a lot of different characteristics just jump into one different pool, you see. Then start with the flash. Now, flash running back is someone who predominantly is speedier, smaller, built more around to rushing on the outside of an offensive line. Someone who traditionally maybe not be the guy to put in the heavy contact situations. Someone who is also very good at catching from the backfield tends to be thought more of as a flashback. There's a few good characteristics or people you can think of here tend to think of like the Darren Sproles of the world. You know, nice 5'4", but, you know, nippy, great hands, that sort of thing. That's the sort of archetype sort of thing we're talking about. Now, and, when we say Thunder...
We move on to Thunder, don't we have a flashback in Buffalo?
in the form of CJ Spiller, of course.
Thank you. Right, sorry, now you may continue.
Right, continuing on. Thunder. Right, a Thunderback. Would be someone we look at the other side. We've said someone who's speedy. Now, all running backs are speedy. Don't get me wrong. I'm not talking about a slow back. I'm talking about someone who's going to hit you like a wall of sound, just like the Thunder. Basically, these are the bigger, meaner, rougher backs, the guys who are going to like pound it straight through the center, and they're just going to work their way into the upper levels of the defense. We're talking knocking linebackers over. We're talking hitting safeties in the mouth. That's really what they're meant to do. These guys are just trying to fight for those short yardage situations. When you need a yard, you go to these backs because you know they're going to lower their shoulder and just absolutely keep those legs churning as they try and get every single grain of dirt they're going to fight for. And those are the sort of guys we're sort of talking about. Big backs, we're talking like people like Marshawn Lynch. For our Buffalo friends, we're talking our Fred Jacksons would be our more Thunder backs. Covered that base there?
That has,
and that's the sort of archetype. Yeah, that's that sort of stereotype we're looking to portray there. So when I'm saying a flashback, he's nippy, he's quick, he's going to be used in lots of different ways, i.e. out of the backfield catching as well as running. When I'm thinking Thunder, we're talking about the bulkier, more every down back, greater blocking as well. I don't think I said that. These guys tend to be bigger, so they tend to be much better blockers of the ball. And like I said, people like Marshawn Lynch in the beast mode sort of people who really get the ball rumbling. When you hear your commentators saying he's rumbling, that's again a metaphor come from this Thunder back sort of.
I always think of playing John Madden as well. When you think of Thunderbacks, admittedly at the time he's describing fullbacks. I'm sure you remember this, Rich. When John Madden comes on, he says to the coach says to the running back, "If you need a yard," he's like, "Well, I'll get you a yard." And he's like, "How about if I need four?" He's like, "I'll get you one." That's what we're talking about right there with the power. So now we move on to some more technical terminology, and if you can please describe for our listeners, Marcus, an offensive illegal formation.
Okay, an offensive illegal formation. Right, so hopefully everyone listening knows that there's 11 guys on the field for the offense.
That's a good start. We've never covered that.
So there's 11 guys on each side of the ball. On our offensive side, they're made up of two sort of zones in an offense. Okay, you talk about a lot of zones in defense. Offense is nice and easy. There's two zones. There is the line of scrimmage zone, which literally just goes all along the line of scrimmage, which is just a yard sort of deep as you go along from sideline to sideline. And behind that is what we call the backfield. And everything behind that line of scrimmage is just backfield. Now, when you're actually setting up in a formation before a play, you must have 7 guys on that line of scrimmage. Now, with the fact that you've got 5 guys in an offensive line, starting from the left guard, left tackle to left guard, a center, right guard, right tackle, you then have to put 2 more guys onto a line. So you can either put 2 wide receivers onto a line, or a more sort of regular formation is we put a tight end, stick him next to a tackle, and we put one of our wide receivers on as well. That makes our 7. So that means in the backfield, we should have the 4 remaining guys. That's the quarterback, normally another wide receiver, a fullback, and a running back. That's just the standard. Well, I mean, I know there's lots of different formations, I'm not getting into that now. To have an illegal formation is to break this sort of ratio of 7-4. If in the backfield, we're only going to have 4 guys, putting any more than 4 guys into that backfield will also consist of this illegal formation. So basically, when we're talking about illegal formation, you see someone throwing a flag, one of the referees, is because either a wide receiver or a tight end hasn't lined up quite in that zone and they've ended up drifting too far in the backfield, or if what we've had is we've tried to put an extra wide receiver, turn him into a running back, and he's actually encompassed into that zone. Now, the only way that this, I just want to clarify this out. If a man is in motion going through the backfield, he must reset himself up back in, if he's come off the line of scrimmage, he must reset himself back onto the line of scrimmage and hold for a second before play can begin. And that is a legal formation.
Fantastic. The only thing I just want to finish off with our listeners on the illegal formation is, if like myself, they may have heard the phrase covering the tight end, which also draws a flag in line with the illegal formation. So maybe if you just spend just sort of 30 seconds or so just quickly explaining what covering the tight end would mean on the formation front.
Yep. Okay, so basically when you're covering the tight end, basically you can't have an offensive lineman in front of the place of the tight end in his place on the line of scrimmage. You have to make sure he is to the side. You can't put him in front and behind, as it were. So one behind the other, he has to at least be to the side of that tackle guard.
And can a receiver be called for covering a tight end?
Yes, because again, we're talking about, especially in the bunch formations, and we'll probably cover that another time, when you stack the line of scrimmage as close as possible to the sort of the line of scrimmage, you get as many guys around as they can. Again, wide receiver, he can't, again, stand in front of a tight end, blocking his position, sort of one man behind another.
Brilliant. Thank you very much, Marcus, as always.
Football on your phone means football all the time.
Do you want that?
He does, she does, our dad does.
Does your dad want it? I mean,
it's football on your phone.
Yeah.
What do you think Alexander Graham Bell would say if he saw you watching football on your phone?
Who cares? Dude's dead.
It's football on your phone.
Okay, so now we move on to the awards part of the show and also our
swing week.
Let's start this week because he's not been feeling as loved because he's been letting the other guy go first. Start off this week with our Mr.
Ray Lewis
award. Rich, do you have a winner or do you also have a runner-up for us?
I have a joint winner this week. I hope that's okay.
That's perfect, mate. Yeah, let's hear that.
Well, Marcus is going to like this, actually. I've gone for Quinn and Long from St. Louis. For, you know, simply managing to shut down both Wilson and Lynch. Well, I mean, mostly, obviously, Wilson. You know, a couple of sacks each. I couldn't really split them, so I thought joint winners.
Chris Long and Robert Quinn.
Absolutely.
Brilliant. Okay. Marcus, do you have a runner-up for us in your Mr.
Ray Lewis
award?
I do. Surprisingly, it's not one of those two, so that's quite good. I actually went this week because, for my runner-up this week, he gets it because I'm so impressed with his transformation into the league. And I've given it to Tyrann Mathieu.
Oh, fantastic.
I mean, he had 7 tackles and, of course, an interception. Now, I know Ryan had 4 on the day, so it was kind of like handing them out. I mean, he wasn't the one who had the most, I believe. There was another Cardinal defensive back who managed to get 2 picks on the day. But I really feel that Tyrann Mathieu, coming out of college and all the controversy, I really think he's, you know, they took a gamble drafting him and, you know, bringing him into the team. And I really think he's starting to pay off. He's paying his dues. He's keeping his head down. And he's really becoming an integral cog into that defensive system. And I think guys like that, sooner or later, you know, that's how the Champ Baileys of the world start. You know, yeah. The ones we're talking about now, the guys, the shutdown corners you want to be, the guys look up to. And I think he's well on his way to becoming that.
It helps that he's got Patrick Peterson there as well, because I know Peterson's been spending a lot of time working out with him and drilling with him and going through technique with him and just trying to take him under his wing. Even though Peterson's only been in the league a few years, he's kind of taken that veteran role and taken the honey badger under his wing and trying to improve him and make him a better corner.
Some guys just need to make the mistake and then learn from it. And I think he's made his mistakes. He's learning from it. He's, you know, he's paying his dues. He's got his mentor there, as you say. And I really do feel that he's just matured. And like I said, I've given this award sometimes to, like, guys, again, we've listened to Ray Lewis, and I think he would be another person who, you know, he had his troubles, but he matured into his role. So I think it's very apt that, you know, we look to the maturity part of this. And I think he's going to become a great player if he keeps the way he's doing really well.
Yeah, and sticking with that theme, actually, my runner-up is someone I don't think we've mentioned very much at all in the 31 episodes we've been doing the podcast. and that's Sean Lee, the linebacker out of Dallas Cowboys. Although they lost, obviously, to Detroit, as we were discussing earlier, he is becoming a real key player in that Dallas defense. 10 total tackles, 2 interceptions. In fact, all year he's had 81 tackles and 4 picks. And just ask Mickey, who's got him in his fantasy team, he definitely wouldn't drop him.
No, absolutely. I honestly think he, again, is someone who's become very integral to that defense. I mean, we've actually, Dallas defense this year is looking very impressive, to be fair. I think there's been a few games against Philly, shutting Philly down, and Philly having a very impressive offensive sort of lineup. I know Vic's not in it, but still, there's a lot of weapons there, and it's Kelly's offense. It's a high-scoring offense. So I really think that Dallas defense is all stepping up.
Brilliant. So let's try and we'll have to try and speed through these now, unfortunately, on the time front. But how about your winner for your Mr. Ray Lewis award?
What? Rather ironically, I went for Sean Lee as my winner.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think, you know, like you said, he had 7 tackles, 10 in total, and those 2 interceptions. I really felt that he made an impact. Though they didn't win the game, I think they wouldn't have got anywhere close to have winning it had he not been part of it.
Oh, fantastic. Well, that also saves a little bit of time, so well done for that one. And that was not pre-planned in the slightest, I can assure you, hand on heart. You might not like my winner, though, because I've gone with Bruce Irvin, defensive end for Seattle Seahawks. In total, last night, he had 9 tackles, and he ticked every other column, pretty much. He had a sack, he had a forced fumble, and he had an interception. So, again,
yeah. We
talk about impacts, being on the line as well. Not very often that you get the credit for it, but how often do you see a defensive lineman that picks up a sack, a pick and a forced fumble all in the game?
No, very impressive. I mean, the Seattle defense is just impressive.
Brilliant. Okay, so congratulations to our Mr.
Ray Lewis
award winners. We had Chris Long and Robert Quinn from the St. Louis Rams for Rich. We had Sean Lee, Dallas Cowboys for Marcus, and Bruce Irvin from Seattle for myself. Now we move on to the award. Rich, you've been on the sidelines for a little while there, buddy, so let's get you straight back in here. Do you have a runner-up or a winner for us, or both?
I've taken a runner-up, Colin Kaepernick. I mean, you know, partly because I was at the game on Sunday, but, you know, he had a good game. He's had, you know, it's a bit of second-season syndrome going on, but I thought, you know, he really pulled it together on Sunday, and the Jags aren't great, but it's still an NFL game. It's, you know, he's flown across the Atlantic, and I thought he had a fantastic game.
Brilliant. Okay, how about yourself for a runner-up then, Marcus?
I actually went for, we were talking about Thursday Night Lights, and I went for Cam Newton.
Ooh.
Carolina Panthers, okay. Yeah. 221 yards in the air, 2 TDs, no interceptions again. He's been really good with not throwing interceptions in his pass decision this year. But also the 50 yards on the ground with the touchdown. I really feel that he had a sort of coming out party with just total domination over the Bucks. I know that's not a big deal these days, but I really do feel that I'm a big Cam fan, and I really feel that games like this make me bash my head against the wall when you see him turn around and just play so badly some other day. So this is the consistency he needs to find.
That's it. Have we slated him on the podcast recently? Because he's playing well again, so I don't know what's going on there.
I can't remember. We must have.
Clearly. Well, my runner-up this week, I've gone with Matthew Stafford from the Detroit Lions. 488 yards through the air, only 1 touchdown, did throw 2 interceptions, but most importantly, because we're always talking impact for this award, that game-winning, dirty cheating, great playing touchdown that he scored at the end of the game to win it. If either of you have got his teammate as your Megatron winner, speak now, because it'll roll in nicely.
Certainly. Megatron!
Have you both got him as your winner?
I could not really.
Go for it, Rich. I'll let you go first there. Sorry, mate.
Well, I mean, you know, it's second most yards in history, wasn't it? I can't say much more than that.
It was the second most in history. However, it was the most in 4 quarters.
Right. There you go, then. You don't really need to say much more than that, do you?
Well, no, that's fair enough. But, Marcus, I'd like you to add to it anyway.
I've broken it down, so we can forgive his 1 fumble, right? With his 329 yards, okay? 329 yards out of Stafford's 488, I've worked it out. He took 67% of all yardage coming out of Stafford at the weekend, plus 14 receptions off Stafford's 33. That's 42% of the catches, baby. That's productivity.
Well, yeah, between him and Reggie Bush, like Bush, I think, had 91 of the other receiving yards. So between him and Bush, they pretty much had 80, 85%.
Cleaned up shop, they did, yeah.
So, but not that we're saying they're a three-man team or anything, but they are a three-man team, right?
Pretty much.
Pretty much. Well, except for, is it Durham or
Dunham?
Oh,
yeah, Chris Durham did have that mint catch down the sideline to put him in a great position, to be fair.
That's what happens when you manage to hook up with old college roommates who know how to throw to you. So there you go.
See, now, well, you guys have gone for the guy who's phenomenal percentage-wise, getting the most yards, catches, setting another record in the NFL. I've gone a slightly different one. Same position, different team. I've actually gone with Marvin Jones for the Cincinnati Bengals. This week,
fair enough.
He only got 122 yards, but the guy got four touchdowns. He was literally everywhere. He was unplayable. The Jets didn't know how to handle him. Every cornerback that went against Jones couldn't stop him. They put Milner on him. It didn't work. They brought on a replacement for Milner. It didn't work. Whatever they tried to do to cover this guy, it just didn't happen.
It was definitely, yeah, really impressive. I mean, to be fair, Dalton, again, he's had some really bad games. I was saying about Cam's inconsistency. This was another one where he just shined. And you're like, why can't you do this every week? I mean, I know you're not going against the Jets every week. It's sometimes I'd be, as a Bengal fan, if I was a Bengal fan, I'd be smacking my head against the wall some weeks because it would just infuriate me.
I can imagine. Okay, so let's do a quick congratulations to our award winners. Calvin Johnson, Megatron himself, getting two votes there, and Marvin Jones, Cincinnati Bengals. So we'll finish off this segment with our
Swing of the Week.
So, Rich, who have you gone for as your Swing of the Week?
I was tempted to go for what I thought might be a big swing, but I've gone for a small one. Chargers Redskins, that's a toss-up.
Yeah, I'll that's going to be an interesting game.
We'll go for a field goal either way.
Okay, so we're talking about 55% kind of...
Yeah, absolutely. Depends which team turns up.
You say either way, but I'm going to have to make you pick a way it's going to go, I'm afraid. Rules are rules.
I'll take the Chargers, I think.
So Chargers, 55%.
Yeah.
Nice one. Thanks, Rich. How about yourself, Marcus?
I've gone for the Baltimore-Cleveland game, and I'm giving those Browns a 70-30 swing.
Really?
I am. I honestly think... I saw Campbell play. He absolutely, this weekend, owned the defense. He looked like he'd never left. It was brilliant. I think the Browns have got a good enough defense that, you know, I think that they could hold off Baltimore and the likes of, you know, Joe Flacco. And, well, they're not even using Ray Rice, so, you know, what's the point of sort of, like, having to worry about him? But I think that Cleveland have enough pieces in place, and I'm actually that impressed, enough impressed with them. I know they didn't actually win against KC this week, but I think they did enough to convince me that they'd be able to beat the likes of, say, Baltimore by at least a 7-10 point swing.
Right, well, we're not giving you any more sugar because that's just ridiculous. But
hey,
fair play to you.
I'd like to just put it on record. I know we're running out of time, but I'd like to put it on record. Who called New York Giants getting their first game in Minnesota?
Eli Manning?
No, I'm just saying. Watch this space.
No, fair play. And do you like how I managed to work Eli Manning there into the podcast? Just
always like try and get him in once.
Once a week, it's like, I don't know if you've ever listened to the Dave Damashek show. They have that competition, don't they, to say, I can never remember the name of the player they try and fit in, but they always have to try and come up with like an obscure way to get this guy into their podcast. And, well, Eli Manning is kind of like that for us. Okay.
And there's our connection.
There's our connection for the day. And if you don't already, check out the Damashek podcast. It is brilliant. Obviously, after you've listened to ours. So let's finish off with my swing of the week. I'm going with another controversial one following my good buddy Marcus. I told him he had to lay off the sugar. I'm going with Buffalo 55% over Kansas. Now, you may think I'm crazy, but this is my thinking for it. Buffalo have a phenomenal rushing attack. Spiller, if he's back this week, will double up with Jackson. And somehow, the Buffalo offensive line finds a way to get Tashard Choice yards, right? Kansas are 19th against the run. They give up over 100 yards a game against the run. Buffalo's main weakness this year on defense has been being beaten by a deep pass, and Kansas don't really have a deep threat in the passing game. So if you put all those things together, I see us winning by a field goal.
Now it's had too much.
I think, to be fair, I think the boy might be onto something.
What do you reckon, Rich?
Oh dear, I don't want to disappoint you.
No, do it. Knock me out. Just hit me with that final Rocky punch. Take me down.
I can't see it, mate. I'm sorry.
Brutal but honest. That's why we love you, Rich.
Thank you.
No worries. So that wraps it up from us this week. Richard, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on the show. I hope you've enjoyed your time with us.
Thank you very much for inviting me. It's been an absolute pleasure.
Brilliant, and hopefully we'll have you back on again soon.
Indeed, I'll be happy to be here.
So, from myself and Marcus, take care, football fans, and stay safe.